We can pick up now our reflections on this second voyage of the theology of the body, where we left off last Friday. We looked at covenant marriage through the eyes of the bride. Now we wade across the center aisle of the church from the bride's side to meditate on matters from the groom's side. Every groom feels in his bones that he must pass a test to win the hand of his beloved. In point of fact, he longs for someone to test his love. You may remember the pop band The Proclaimers sang about this chivalrous sentiment. I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more, just to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. We find a more classic test of love in Shakespeare's play, The Merchant of Venice. Various eligible suitors solicit fair Portia's hand in marriage, but they must successfully navigate the casket test. Portia's deceased father has left detailed instructions that each supposed suitor must select from 3 caskets. The test is devised to weed out arrogant, selfish, or vain partners for Portia. You fathers really should read more Shakespeare, you know? The first box or casket is covered in gold and bears the inscription, "Who chooseth me shall gain what many men desire." The implied question is, are you like many men, or do you have a unique strength of character? The second of silver states enigmatically, "Who chooseth me shall get as much as he deserves." That is, did you egotistically think you deserve the best, or soberly assess your own faults and weaknesses? But the third casket is coated in unattractive lead and reads, "Who chooseth me must give and hazard all he hath." Put practically, are you willing to give till it hurts? Now close your ears if you don't want to know the results of the test, but all suitors fail except humble and heroic Bassanio. Why he chooses the lead casket is worth pausing to ponder. He says, "So may outward show be least themselves. The world is still deceived with ornament. Therefore then, thou gaudy gold, hard food for Midas, I will none of thee, nor none of thee, silver, thou pale and common drudge, tween man and man. But thou meager lead, which rather threatenest than dost promise aught, thy paleness moves me more than eloquence, and here choose I. Joy be the consequence." And holding his breath, Bassanio opens the casket to see Portia's smiling portrait smiling back at him. And Bassanio has just graduated from suitor to spouse. What Shakespeare calls the casket test, the scriptures label the bride's price. We who live in modern Western culture may not immediately grasp the significance of the bride's price. Why not? Well, because today it is the bride who pays the price to marry the groom. It is her family that forks over the funds for the ceremony, the music, the photography, the dress, the venue, the food, and don't forget the priest's stipend. But in the Bible, And in ancient Near Eastern cultures, the groom paid the bride's price by some heroic feat or personal sacrifice. Consider this rather dramatic example in 1 Samuel 18. King Saul says to David, "The king desires no other price for the bride, his daughter, than the foreskins of 100 Philistines." That is, Saul wanted David to circumcise the foreigners. And how did David react? We read a few verses later, "David arose and went with his men and slew 200 Philistines. Saul pressed David to walk 500 miles, and David gladly walked 1,000. Moreover, when the groom in the Bible stands as the covenant mediator, he represents primarily God's marital interests and not merely his own. Now, is there any other suitor out there seeking humanity's hand in marriage besides God? As the church lady from Saturday Night Live often reminded us, could it be Satan? In the Bible, false gods or idols are called Baals or Baals, which means Lord, Master, and most importantly, husband. From Genesis chapter 3, the incident of original sin onward, a fundamental shift of loyalties has occurred. The bride, Eve, no longer is wedded to God through Adam, but she has spiritually eloped and, covenantly speaking, run off with Satan. The bride price, thenceforth, consists of rescuing her from her satanic suitor and returning her to God, her rightful divine lover. But more often than not, the unrepentant bride runs back to Satan's arms. And don't be too hard on Eve, because every time we sin, we do exactly the same. Pondering deeply this notion of the bride's price reveals another crucial aspect of the story of Scripture. How often we hear the words redemption and salvation and immediately conjure up images of Jonathan Edwards' famous sermon, "Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God." We unreflectively think, "Well, I want to be redeemed or saved because I don't want to burn in hell for all eternity." And that image is certainly an accurate description of redemption and salvation, but it does not exhaust its meaning, nor does it penetrate its true depths, which are found in the eternal Father's heart. Rather, every time you hear the word redemption or salvation in the Bible, at the Mass, during private prayer, think of the bride's price. The bride's price, then, helps us catch the true plot twists of Scripture writ large, from the first pages of Genesis to the last of Revelation. But tragically, this insight escapes us, modern Westerners, because the roles of our bride and groom are reversed in who pays the price, the dowry for the wedding. It is hard for modern Westerners to learn many lessons the Bible tries to teach us. Further, we should not forget that each covenant mediator remains a fallen man, and therefore forms part of the unfaithful bride. As such, he must overcome his own inner resistance, remember concupiscence, to God's overtures of love. St. Augustine captured this double duty deftly, saying, "For you, I am a bishop. With you, I am a Christian." That solidarity with sinful humanity will prove to be a fatal flaw in every covenant mediator, save the last, Jesus. Like the suitors, tempted by the gold and the silver caskets, the first five covenant mediators likewise fail the test of love. Thus, while the first five covenant mediators were successful in expanding the bride to her proper proportions, they fail the test of love and cannot pay the bride's price. Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, and David can rightly reiterate with Augustine, "For you, I am a bishop, a covenant mediator. With you, I am a Christian in need of redemption." Only the sixth mediator, Jesus, the God-man, alone pays the price to redeem the bride, humanity. He alone was willing and able to pay the pound of flesh, that is, his human nature, nailed to a tree. Praised be Jesus Christ.